welcome to another episode of the Hero Makers podcast. We are in the middle of November right now. And Anne, can I tell you something, Anne, about my weekend?
Yeah, go for it.
Really exciting is that I actually put up Christmas decorations this week. I said 45 days out, like that in the year that we're in right now, I have given myself permission to do that.
Yeah, go for it.
Are you seeing any Christmas decorations up in Toronto, Anne?
Not at all.
Okay, well, I'm just going to call myself a trendsetter or something, right?
You are. You're a pioneer. Go, Lori.
Pioneer. Well, Anne, it's been fun to do these podcasts, and I'm just amazed at the great stories that we're hearing and the people that we're talking to, and grateful to all of our listeners who are providing us some good feedback, and we are taking that into account. I know that somebody had actually emailed saying they want us to integrate more of the hero making traits into each episode. And so, exciting news, today we're actually going to be doing that. And I'm very excited about our guest today because she was part of my recent journey to make a major life transition. So you guys all know this, but back in June, I actually left my job that I had for 15 years. I love my job, but it was just really time to move on. And I wanted to start this Hero Makers. And so I went to Lisa Vischer. And she kind of helped me through that rocky time and helped me kind of discover more about myself. And so today, Lisa, who is trained in the Enneagram, who's an Enneagram coach and a spiritual director, Lisa's going to talk to us about the Enneagram, help us understand what it is, and then maybe we'll even talk about how it intersects with some of the hero traits that we have. So, Anne, you are the six, wing seven. Seven, wing six. So maybe she's going to tell us about how we're great partners as well, or not. Maybe we need like the three, the achiever, to keep us going.
Definitely like-minded. So that's good.
That's right. Well, welcome to the podcast, Lisa.
Hello. Glad to be here, lady.
Oh, it's great to have you. And can I just say this, Lisa, that if you guys don't know Lisa, she's also behind Junior Asparagus in the Veggie Tales. So if you're like me and you have kids, then
what? Say more. You are the voice of the asparagus?
Yep. I didn't know we'd be talking about that today, but perfectly fine. So I'm married to Phil Vischer, who created Veggie Tales. And so he does most of the voices. Basically, I say I'm married to Bob the Tomato, but I happen to be the voice of Junior Asparagus. It's true.
That's so awesome.
That's amazing.
That's so awesome. So I love it because our kids are like still like VeggieTales and they're seven and nine. So it just keeps the fun going. But Lisa, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in the Enneagram, a little bit about what you do with it right now.
Yeah, so I actually happened to bump into it when it was so under the radar. Like today it's everywhere, but it was over 20 years ago. I was actually in my early 20s and my mom had attended kind of a little workshop up in Minnesota and encountered it. And knowing that I was sort of into psychology and things like that, brought it to me and it changed. It did what the Enneagram does, where I had kind of an undoing. And I was at a pretty young age and I found it so personally helpful. And because my personality and what I like to do is working with people, I just shared it a lot. I worked with it sort of informally a lot. I was doing mentoring with people and we would talk about it a lot. So I've kind of been a student of learning about the Enneagram for a long, like a couple decades, sort of off and on. And then as I began to do more formal coaching with people, and that sort of coincided with this going viral, everyone's asking about it, and I happen to know about it. So now I've become kind of the Enneagram coach, which is fine because I really enjoy incorporating. I tend to come from a faith-based perspective, and I like the intersection of psychology and spirituality and sort of how knowing ourselves helps us become, helps us grow in all ways, personally, spiritually, relationally. So yeah, I now currently meet with people. I do typing interviews with people to help them figure out their type. I'll do coaching. Sometimes I do workshops, and this is my first podcast.
I love it. I love it. That's exciting. You told us that right before we started. I can't believe it, because I feel like you're just such a good teacher and a good coach. But maybe it's this pandemic, right? That's changed.
Actually, you know what it is? Is that so? Not to jump into the weeds immediately, but many people don't know that there's three kinds of each number. And so there's these 27 subtypes, and I happen to be the subtype that sort of prefers one-to-one interaction, which is why I love coaching. And I think it might be why I'm not like veering into podcasts, but yeah. I need to, so I appreciate being here.
Yeah, except that you're right here, you're talking one-to-one to me and Anne. So
that is true.
It's like that, yeah. Because we need coaching. We need help here ourselves.
I'm glad to help.
Lisa, so tell us about a little bit about the Enneagram. I mean, there's a lot of personality tests out there, right? Like there's StrengthsFinders, there's the DISC, there's all sorts of ones. And I remember a lot of my coworkers, like last year even, they were very into it, right? It's kind of like you say, like people hear about it and then they're like, oh, like their lives are changed. And I remember this is before I even knew much about it. And they were trying to peg me in certain, you know, as a certain type. And I was like, you can't put me in a box and all this. But I do feel like over even the past year in my little world, that it has gained prominence. I mean, I heard about it before, but I feel like it continues to grow and grow in its prominence. So tell us about what it is and like why people love it. Like, what does it say about us? Why is it so important?
So the first thing I'll just say in response to what you just said is that we show up to the Enneagram with it kind of out of the stance of our type. So it is a very typical for sevens to initially not like the Enneagram because they don't like boxes. And so in a way, our response to it, so oftentimes, you know, can kind of give us a little bit of insight into maybe where we might land. I do love the phrase, and it is very true, that the Enneagram does not put you in a box. It actually shows us the box we're stuck in so we can get out of the box. Wow. And I think if more people were talking about it that way, it would be a little more, it would be easier for those who have intelligence around unhealthy limitation to be a little more receptive and not quite so, you know, leery of it. Yeah, this is a good question. The Enneagram is very, very different than other assessments out there, and I'll talk a little bit about why. So most people describe the Enneagram as a system of personality with 9 different types, and that is true, but it's actually a lot more than that. It's really more accurate to say that the Enneagram is a map of human psychological ego with these 9 variations of human ego, and I'm going to tell you what ego means. So ego is a little bit more than just sort of my personality habits. That's part of it. But ego is really made up of 3 things. Ego contains our core motivations, the things that's driving us, the things kind of my basic desire, what I most want and what I most want to avoid. That's different for different people. So really we're motivated by different things. And then the second thing ego is made up of is the personality patterns that are result out of that motivation. And so if you think of personality as cognitive, emotional, behavioral, really what we're saying is part of ego or personality is that we have patterns of thinking, patterns of emotion, patterns of thought, emotion, and behavior. So we're predictable. We have these patterns, and that's part of what gives me my personality and helps distinguish ourselves from each other. But from an ego perspective, these patterns are sort of protecting the motivations. They arise out of those things. And then the third thing that ego is made up of is this idealized sense of self that we have as a result of what we're motivated by and how we go about accomplishing that or avoiding that. So motivations, personality patterns, and kind of this sense of self. This is who I am. You know, this is how I am. This is what I do. This is how I think of myself. So if you've read any Enneagram books, they'll often talk about false self. Part of why they talk about ego as a false self from a psychological standpoint is because ego is really this part of who we are that has been modified and formed as a result of our interaction with the world. Basically, when we're really, really young, we need a strategy, right? We need an approach. And so we need this like organized response to reality, to this world that we're in and how we're going to show up in it, how we're going to make sense of it, how we're going to respond to it. And we actually need a response to reality before we can even talk about reality, before we even know what reality is. So it has to be kind of wired in. And so this psychological wiring that we have provides this coherent and orderly way of organizing ourselves and helping us sort of get through the world. So your Enneagram types really just sort of, this is my style. This is my way of how I see the world, how I interpret the world, how I tend to respond. So what makes that, that's pretty different than other assessments out there. You know, StrengthFinders is identifying abilities that we have, which is great. You know, Myers-Briggs, you know, essentially, here's how I'll describe it, is that the way that most assessments are descriptive, they are giving us language and helping us describe what we do, what we already know what I do, but now I've got language to talk about it. So if I'm an introvert and I didn't know that word and I read, some people sort of get drained of energy when they're with people, and that's called an introvert. I know I do that, but now I can talk to you about it and you can talk to me. And so these assessments can help us really broker well our relationships, which is great. The Enneagram goes so far beyond that. It includes some of those things, but instead of being just descriptive, the Enneagram really fundamentally is explanatory because it tells us why we're doing what we're doing. And so again, if you come back to these motivations, each of the nine types has this unique set of motivations. And so that's super powerful information. And this is why the Enneagram is such a great help. It's because beliefs drive behavior. Motivations drive behavior. So it's really not super effective to try to modify behavior in and of itself, but getting at what's driving the behavior is what helps us sort of become more fully transformative of our behaviors. So this understanding of sort of why we're doing what we're doing and this core fear, this core desire, this core thing that's sort of always operating at a subconscious level is influencing how we think, feel, and act. And if that's subconscious and I'm not aware of it, then it's in the driver's seat instead of me. Or if you're a Christian, maybe instead of me and God together. So that's why I talk about the Enneagram, is that your type really isn't who you are. And I think part of the misuses of the Enneagram is we over-identify with a type, and I'm a seven, I'm a six, I'm this. It's really what we're saying is sort of, I lead with this, but I have all these other capacities, but I'm a little bit stuck in this one space. So it's really not who I am. It's more of this defensive construct, and that bumps into other people's defensive constructs. And now we have conflict. I kind of think about it as like psychological bumper cars. So the whole point of the Enneagram and why it's so helpful is it helps us relax our defensive stance, our defensive construct, and all the habits that come along with it. And that helps me be able to be the real me, showing up in the real world, doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Lisa, I really like what you're saying, because so what I'm gathering is that you're saying it just really helps you understand yourself better with self-awareness of like what actually drives you and what motivates you, and then the behavior personality that goes along with that. And then if we're unaware of that, then we just have, like what you said, something about what kind of bumper cars, psychological or
bumper cars.
That's awesome.
And I'm like, wow, I've never heard that before. That sounds terrible. But also understandable that we would have conflict, because if my motivation is clashing with your motivation, and then it's going to be ugly. It won't be pretty. Yeah.
And if neither of us are aware, that we can't really, like, we can't change what we can't see. And so right. I'm really glad you brought this up, because what I forgot to say is self-awareness is one of primary gifts of the Enneagram. And again, it's not just becoming aware of behaviors, it's really becoming aware of just an entire self, an entire way that's rote and habitual, that if I can't see it, there's really not much we can do about it.
So I would like for us to move into like different types, but before we do that, I would just like to know, have you seen, or what is the difference between somebody who comes in at your first meeting as a coach, they're like, hi, I actually kind of really reject all of this, and I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to be put in a box. I don't like it. I'm really suspicious. To after. Like, what does it before and after look like?
That's me. I can answer that.
Yeah. take it away, Lori.
Okay.
No, I'll let you answer, Lisa. Can I just give like my own personal, you know, when I came to Lisa, and I was like, okay, I think I'm a seven, and this is, you know, what does this mean for me and all that? For me, Lisa, like, it was very clarifying, and two, it was kind of refreshing to know that like I wasn't, like, my thinking and my actions weren't bad. Like, I think I'd always had this little voice in my head that's like, well, why am I, why do I kind of go from thing to thing? And why am I always kind of like looking to the future and doing these things? And so like from a personal standpoint, it helped me to understand, okay, this is the other people think like this. And so it kind of normalized for me. That was key.
Yeah. So it's so funny what you describe, and we're not going to get into this much today, but I really do want people to understand that these nine I think really of these nine things as nine spaces that contain human capacities. That's just part of our design. And so we have all these capacities and they're all sort of operating to various degrees. And sevens, which is what you are, also have a very strongly operating one capacity, which I hear in you saying, oh, I'm wondering if my seven is bad. Because there's this part of the one inner critic that's like wants to be good and do good. And so there, that's also operating in you. So again, just sort of the bigger picture of it's not just about our one type. But your question, Anne, is really more specific to the types. People come to this as they are, and their obstacles are unique to their type structure and their personal situations. So I guess I would just say everyone is really completely unique. I'm not trying to move people from closed to open. If they're talking to me, they're probably open, and I'm trying to support their journey at this point. Wow. And help them maybe see how some of the architecture of their psychology might be hindering that work, particularly with regard to how fear might be operating. And so really the Enneagram helps us tell the truth. Truth telling is really, really powerful. So I'm trying to sit with people in a context of truth telling and let the work unfold as it should. And for most people, it sounds similar to what Lori described, where there's this sort of this relaxing a little bit around the things we're feeling concerned about when we first get started, whether it's with regard to the model or myself or my world or whatever. And things start to relax a bit. We start to have a little bit of a wider perspective, and now we have actually more options available.
So, okay, so Lisa, let's kind of get into the nine types. And then what you would say is like the lens through which each of those kind of sees the world. I don't know if you read books, sometimes they don't start at one. It's very odd. They'll start at a different type. And I'm like, well, one starts. But so walk us through the nine and just what are the lenses through which all of these types can see the world?
Yeah. So there's a reason for why they don't start at one, if you want to know what it is.
Yes, please.
So the Enneagram has nine, right? It's a circle with these nine kind of spaces. And nine divided by three is three. And so there's sort of like these three groupings of three. And this is organized around our centers of intelligence, our head center and our heart center and our kind of gut center. And so we have body types and we have heart types and we have head types. And so some people, when they teach, they want to cover one center in its entirety. And so they'll start, a lot of times people are starting with eight, nine, and one, because that's that center. I find that I don't want to confuse people, so I start with one. it's like, this is confusing enough as it is.
It is.
Yeah. So the lens, so part of the fallout of having an ego or a psychological kind of filter, part of the fallout is that it hijacks kind of the way we think and it hijacks how we see. And we have to become aware of that because it means sort of we're hyper-focusing on things and maybe missing out on seeing some other things. But on the upside, these core motivations actually create kind of a lens through which we're filtering, like viewing the world, and that's filtering how, like what we care about and how we're showing up in it. So yes, each type is seeing the world kind of in a different way. And I'm going to give you my name for the types. It's not helpful that most authors and people are calling them different things. So really it's best to just talk about them as the numbers, because then we don't get confused. So anyway, I call ones reformers, not perfectionists. And the reason why is because I said there's three kinds of ones and they're not all perfectionists. And therefore, I feel like that's misleading. But they're all reformers. And that's because ones see through the lens of goodness. And so they see all that is wrong and they want to reform and improve things. That's their lens. Twos are often called the helpers. I call them that as well. All three of the twos are helpers in different ways. And so twos see through the lens of compassion. They see all the needs and they are wanting desperately to provide help and support. Threes, I call the performers. Sometimes they're called achievers, but I don't care. I don't think that's as accurate. Threes are performance has an audience in mind. And so threes want to perform to task. They want to perform well. And the only way they really know that is by feedback. And so that's really sort of what threes are trying to please and meet expectations and do well. So threes see through the lens of potential. I'm a three. They're always looking for sort of what can be accomplished. What can we do? What can actually happen? And what is the fullest potential of something? And that gets them very motivated to invest. And so threes see what can be accomplished and want things to really grow and flourish. And you can see, like, if I'm a three and I'm talking to a two and we're in a situation and there's some needs going on that they're seeing that they think are the priority, and I'm seeing like there might be some things that need to get done that's important to get done, we might be at odds in that way. And really, the truth of the matter is they're both true, right? They're just different perspectives. We're seeing sort of different aspects of reality. Fours, I call the embracers. They have a wide open heart, and they see through the lens of beauty. They see beauty in everything, even suffering, and they really want to kind of mine everything for deep meaning, because they're so open-hearted. Five, observers see through the lens of reason. They see data. They see patterns in data. It's oftentimes, you know, science, scientists. They want to see, they're actually all fives have a kind of a scientific filter or mentality. They want to make sense of things for themselves and others. Sixes, I call defenders. Sixes see through the lens of security. And so they're seeing kind of what could go wrong because they have a security lens. And they, what they're wanting then out of this is to create stability and partnership as a result of having that awareness of what could go wrong. Sevens, I call planners. They see through the lens of possibility. So they're seeing this unlimited horizon, and they want to inspire people to make the most of all these wonderful opportunities. Eights, I call challengers. And I don't mean that it's not a negative word, and some people think it is. If you think the world's bad right now, we try living in a world without challengers, like trying to hold things in check. This is what the world looks like with a bunch of those in it. So challengers see through the lens of justice. They see weakness and power imbalances, and they want to come against whatever needs to be checked or protected. And then nines I call mediators. Nines see through the lens of harmony. And so they see connections between people, and they want to help preserve those connections and create belonging. So again, like it's almost like we're wearing a different pair of colored glasses and almost seeing the world in a different color, in a sense. We see the world differently. We notice things differently, and it does arise out of kind of how we're fundamentally motivated. And so the point really for this is that nine different people could walk into a room and see nine different things. And we tend to think then who's seeing rightly and who's seeing wrongly, as opposed to this perspective that we really see all of reality most completely together. We see together. We see the whole together. And nines are the only type that don't need to be told that because of their harmony perspective. There's that implicit belief that we all have something important and valuable to bring. And therefore, they tend to see everybody's perspective as the validity of people's perspectives. And that's why I call them mediators, because then they help us mediate those differently.
Yeah, this is so interesting, Lisa. And what I love, these matches through these lenses, are these yours or did you read these somewhere? Like the goodness, compassion, or mix?
Maybe a combination of both, okay. Maybe. Okay. It's definitely not, what I just told you is not on some page in some book somewhere. I'm sort of compiling what I've learned.
Okay. I love this because it feels like the colors of a rainbow, and all of these things, like when I read them, and we'll put these in the show notes for you guys as well. But when I read them, they are all necessary to the flourishing of our world. And actually some of them, Lisa, if I'm honest, I'm jealous. I look at some of them. Okay, I have a really good friend who's a four. And I remember listening to a podcast about, like, fours are typically, like, sometimes artists, right? And I remember listening to this podcast where they're like, okay, if you're sick, you don't want, like, a seven happy person enthusiast. You want a four. Like, somebody who's going to sit with you in the darkness and just be mm-hmm. present. So I love this because it's like pulling out all the goodness instead of us pointing at people and saying, you know, oh, why can't you be more like this, right? Like if we're not analytical, we don't want to point to people and say, why are you always trying to understand the meaning of everything?
Right. We absolutely want to be grounded in the goodness of good design, you know, and I happen to believe because I have a faith view, that then this is really just sort of a reflection of who made us, in a sense. And therefore, I would never want to come to somebody who might be reflecting that design in a different way than mine and call that bad.
Yeah.
In fact, I would say that's very good and maybe needed. Maybe that's lower in my life. And so from a balance perspective, and one thing I'll just say about what you brought up, it's interesting that you said you're jealous of four, because four is a capacity or a type that needs to be intentionally developed by sevens. Because if they are seeing two different halves of reality, sevens are really focusing on sort of the positive side of reality, the joy. Fours are really oriented about like, let's make sure to do the suffering well, and both are avoiding the other. They actually need one another. So yeah. Maybe you could reframe jealousy as longing, as a good longing.
Maybe this is where I put in the plug for that movie Inside Out. Do you remember that movie?
Oh yes, it's so good.
Yeah. Oh, Anne, have you not seen that movie, Anne?
Whoa. Oh my goodness. Oh.
Okay, go out and watch that movie. All of you guys go out and watch that movie, because one, it's just like uplifting. I mean, yeah. It's just lovely. This girl who has all these different voices in her in her brain, her feelings, and they kind of, it's how they interact
with each other.
Right? Like sadness, envy, joy, all these things. And in the end, it's like, yeah, you need them all. Like sadness to kind of get you through life and then to eventually get you joy.
And honestly, sadness gets a really bad rap, and it's super important. And that movie is one of the few I can think of that really helps us view sadness as the important thing that it is.
I think it's important for us to, in 2020, to acknowledge that it's been a sad year in many ways.
Yes.
So to avoid that or not even value that sounds detrimental. I also, as a six, I like that you called us defenders. That's helpful, because normally I hear like other things that sound super bad, like the phobic.
Right.
I am just a bundle of fear rolling around the world. So anyway, I'd rather like, I'm a defender, but I also really value, partnership and teamwork. I really believe in diversity of thought and of skill, and now apparently Enneagram types.
Yep, that's a gift of six for sure.
So Lisa, you know, here at the Hero Makers, the reason we launched this podcast was because we wanted to encourage people to be the best that they can be and help them believe that like all of us have these gifts. We were born with a purpose. Like none of us are here by accident. We're not going through life with our eyes half open. We want our eyes to be wide open to the opportunities to inspire other people and to make our world better. And so talk to us about like how the Enneagram can help us to become people who are more courageous and who are more humble and who have grit, who could be impartial, who could look at the world and say, you know what, you five, I don't understand you, but I love you anyways. And or whatever it may be. What do you see as the intersection between some of the hero making traits? We don't have to go through all nine, and the Enneagram.
So are you asking for how the Enneagram might help us cultivate these traits? Or are you asking for the different gifts, the different types bring?
Let's start with the first.
Okay. So courage is one of your traits. How does the Enneagram help us become more courageous? So again, I think of courage as taking action in spite of fear. It's not being fearless. It's actually being able to take action in spite of fear. And Enneagram at its core is fear work. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. And it's really brave to face our fears. It's really brave to relax coping mechanisms that we're sort of over-relying on as a defense. So I think the work itself, this inner work, requires courage. Mm-hmm. And develops courage. And as we become kind of less driven by fear, we're sort of less afraid of fear. It's like we fear fear sometimes. And so as kind of this dissipates, I think we're able to take more action in spite of it. Mm-hmm. So it definitely is a developer of courage, I think. It requires courage.
Yeah.
As I think about like sacrifice, again, and being willing to give what we have for the sake of others. So if fear is driving my car, I'm in a state of neediness, right? I'm in a state of taking and not giving. Mm-hmm. Really kind of living out of ego is a scarcity of self. It creates scarcity of self, and it creates a mentality of sort of like what I need is most priority, because it's being fear driven, and fear is designed to grab our attention and say, this is the priority. So I think Enneagram work allows us to see and address what might be scarcity of self, and that's going to allow us to be more generous people who can sacrifice and give for the sake of others. And I think about integrity, you know, the ego self. So integrity is about consistency, but it's not just any kind of consistency. It's about virtuous consistency. The ego's consistent. It predictably does the same things, but it's not virtuously consistent. So I think that, you know, again, I'm going to talk about fear. And so fear, I think integrity requires us to be awake and connected to our core convictions. And so fear disconnects me from myself and my core convictions. And so I think it's really hard then to adhere with any consistency to something I'm disconnected from.
Lisa, can I just interject really quick? So when somebody introduced me to the Enneagram, they had introduced it in such a way that it's helpful for knowing your weaknesses so that you could become a better version of yourself, whatever it may be. Is that one of the benefits of the Enneagram, that we can kind of see where we're lacking a little bit and then push through maybe that fear that you're talking about? Have you heard of this?
I mean, that's kind of the traditional oversimplification, you know, 1.0 view kind of Enneagram work. It's like, oh, I've got these weaknesses and I'm just going to fix them. I stay away a little bit from that because if we're not talking about behavior modification, a behavior modification only works a little. It's not transformational. Mm-hmm. We might improve things a little. And I think the Enneagram can help us improve things a little. But I think that's like sad to me when if that's all it is, because really it helps us encounter how fear is creating destructive patterns, which we might then call a weakness that needs to be fixed. But I can't just go fix those. I have to really get at how this fear is showing up and driving it, you know, and really think about what might be true, because I think there's lies inherent in fear. So that's why I say this is really about fear work. And I think if we're doing that work, things get fixed on their rightly without sort of like this gritty mentality that I have to go make myself a better person. I'm really more trying to shed what's in the way. And then I think it arises naturally. But what your traits do, and maybe even like virtues or for, you know, whatever gifts, they can help us sort of be a little more aware and intentional of where we can, instead of just sort of leaning back and hope it just sort of arises. Mm-hmm. We can move into those with intention, but we have to know that fear is going to try to stop it and corrupt it and hijack it. So that's really where I focus on the work. And again, from an integrity perspective, integrity arises out of consistency with regard to our virtuous convictions, and the ego self is not virtuous. And so it's ultimately just protecting itself. So I don't know how I can be practice integrity unless I'm dealing with that and becoming more connected to who I really am and what my convictions are. Empathy, for sure. The Enneagram work is going to help us develop empathy. The Enneagram fundamentally, the two biggest gifts I think of the Enneagram are self-awareness, like we talked about, and compassion. I think the Enneagram helps us understand better our own hard journey. And that helps us cultivate compassion for ourselves. Kind of like you said, Lori, you used the word normalize, but we can go even further with compassion. This is not only just understandable and normal, but like this is hard to have compassion around that. And then as I understand what that journey looks like for other people, I develop compassion for them. And really what this means is that I'm able to view people's kind of yucky stuff or their reactivity as just symptoms of suffering, symptoms of fear. And I'm going to have a lot that's going to soften my heart and make me much more kind of open-hearted and open-minded to put myself in the place of others and become more empathetic.
Well, I started because I had a spiritual director about 13, 14 years ago, and then she got me onto the Enneagram about then too. So, but since then, it's been helpful for me to really increase my compassion and empathy for my boss, for my teammates that I clash with, you know what I mean? Or if I was married to a spouse. And I think that's really helpful. It's not just how I function, but it really helps me understand what motivates others and why they're behaving in a certain way, and then how we can actually live together more unified.
Yes, you're actually talking about that from a sixth perspective, because of course you are. So the correct response to that is, of course, not like, oh no. And that's because you're talking about like understanding. right? Now I have understanding. Mm-hmm. And that's huge. And okay. So, and then the second piece of that is understanding allows my heart to soften. So it's the set. Well, then, and then we can actually feel, we can actually allow like how people are feeling and doing and the pain that they're experiencing. We can understand mm-hmm. it in our head, and then we can have compassion for it. So it's those two things together.
Do you see any connection, Lisa, between the 9 hero traits and the 9 Enneagram personalities?
I was curious when I first, you know, met you, learned about this, what you've developed, and the fact that you had 9 traits. I thought that was fairly interesting. it piqued my curiosity, and I didn't, I'm not a fan of trying to force things to be, I think things can be complementary without, you know, being same. But, you know, I think there is actually, here's how I thought about it. If I had to assign each of the traits that you talk about to a space, from that standpoint, they did sort of fall into 9 different spaces. So if, I'd be glad to tell you what I think, and then you can decide what you think about it.
The question is that helpful? Is it? Because I'm going to be honest, when I created the 9 traits, I did not have the Enneagram in mind.
Of course.
I had individual people in mind. And I was thinking through, like, what is it about this person that I see something different and amazing in this person? So okay, is it helpful even?
Yeah. You know, I think it is, as long as we have proper understanding. Like, it's not if we don't. I think where it would not be helpful, and I think this is unhelpful, an unhelpful way to think about the Enneagram regardless of this, is to say, to over-identify with our type and say, this is who I am. I'm nothing more than this. And therefore, if a trait falls in my space, I'm only responsible to cultivate that trait, and I can't do the others. I think a lot of people use the Enneagram that way. And that's why I started out by saying that the Enneagram really is a model of human capacity. It's a model of full human design. And we all have every capacity. So there is no excuse. There's no excuse to say, well, I'm not an 8, so just I get to opt out of justice work, or, you know, we don't do that. So if we have the proper, I think, perspective, then in a way it's kind of cool to think about where these traits might exist, because it might help us identify those that are coming more naturally to us, which we can sort of really cultivate with more, maybe easily and with more enthusiasm. And we can also look at, well, these ones are harder for me, and now I understand why, you know, and we might even, and so what I think is interesting is that I know you didn't have the Enneagram in mind, but in a way, the fact that they have at least some supportiveness to each other validates them both. Because if you're going to think about 9 different people who embody 9 different kind of heroic things, and if the Enneagram model is reflective of human capacity reality, then would they not, it's not surprising, I guess is what I'm saying, that they would sort of match up. So I'm going to share what I think, but I would ask everyone to hold it loosely. and make sure that we're not writing off some. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna talk about this through kind of really the gifts that the types bring, and sort of maybe which traits would come more naturally. Mm-hmm. So ones who see through this lens of goodness and see what is wrong and want to make things right, they offer kind of the gift of reform or improvement to the world. And they would naturally embody integrity. Maybe it would help if I give you an example too of a human being that I think is heroic that reflects this. I think John Lewis is a fantastic example of what ones bring to the world. A good trouble could not be more perfectly descriptive of a one showing up in the world to make it better, and seeing kind of trouble, a good kind of distinguishing between bad trouble and good trouble, right? So there's integrity in that space. Twos bring kind of friendship. They help us be friends with each other. And I think they very naturally embody sacrifice. They're willing to do that. Mr. Rogers, I think, is a fabulous example of a 2. Won't you be my neighbor, right? And let's give to other people. So again, I like this because we're ending kind of on actual ideas of heroic people. Threes bring the gift of kind of growth. They keep us moving, and they help us invest in worthy ventures. I think intentionality comes naturally to threes. Mm-hmm. Oprah is a great example of a 3. Mm-hmm. Intentionality really kind of is around goals, right? I'm going to be intentional. I'm going to have goals. I'm going to go after it. I'm not going to sit on it. I'm not going to waste it. So I think threes help us learn about how to do that. 4s and their creativity, they bring creativity, and not just artistically, but creative thinking and kind of heartful, open-heartedness and empathy. Most people say that Princess Di is a 6, and I really disagree. I think she was a 4. And I see her in a heroic sense of that. I see that empathy in so many of her charitable ventures, mm-hmm. and in the way that she showed up to people suffering, like those in the hospital, things like that. 5 bring the gift of wisdom to the rest of us. And because they're so objective, I think impartiality. They are able to stand back and really assess with neutrality and impartiality and objectivity. There are many 5s we could talk about, but the ones I'm going to tell you about is my husband, so Phil Vischer, you know, and actually his podcast host, Sky Jatani, are both 5s. And they bring an impartial, wise evaluation of sort of what's going on in the world. 6s bring the gift of problem solving, and I think courage. So, you know, for you, Anne, reading all about how phobic fears are, that's really just the flip side of the gift. 6s actually have the gift of a gift to be courage when fear is not running the show. And Tom Hanks, I think, is actually a really good example. He's for sure a 6. And I think of even the characters he tends to play in his movies, like Sully. You know, it's like there's these people showing up into the world in this kind of quietly courageous way, making, you know, unifying and making the world a better place. People say Ellen DeGeneres is as well. 7s bring the gift of innovation. They're visionaries and joy. And I'm going to actually put a twist and say that they're the ones that suffer well. They also suffer poorly. But again, that's the flip side, right? They suffer well in the sense that they do not lose their hope or their joy. An optimism, suffering doesn't poison that. And they help us learn, I think, how to suffer well in that way, as long as it's not coping to avoid. 8s bring the gift of leadership and I think grit. 8s are tough and they value toughness. You know, Martin Luther King Jr. would be kind of the textbook person we might think of as a heroic, gritty leader who is oriented around justice. And 9s bring harmony and partnership in a different way that 6s do. Much more in a sense of sort of peaceful belonging to one another, as opposed to sort of the 6s really more about practical efforts. And so these mediators bring this partnership, and I think 9s bring a tremendous amount of humility, naturally embody humility, because they are always wanting to know what other people are thinking. Mm-hmm. Obama is, I think, a very good example of a 9, and he was an excellent mediator. I'm not going to say that these types do this necessarily, but if I were to sort of assign those traits to a kind of a space, I think that works.
I feel kind of validated, Lisa. Yay! But I think, and what we're talking about here is that as hero makers, all of us come from different backgrounds, different personalities, different ways of seeing the world, our worldviews, everything. All of this kind of intermingles together, right? Yeah. So what you're saying is, okay, if you're a certain personality trait in the Enneagram, you know, you're not boxing yourself into that. You're part of this bigger picture with these traits. This, you know, as a 9, so I could see like my husband's a 9. He's like the peacemaker. And I see that humility very strongly in him, but he's also, he has these other things as well that can mesh together. So I think where we're kind of landing the plane here. And the reason we really wanted you on the show is that when we understand ourselves better and we understand those around us better. And I think that is a big value of the Enneagram, is even the people that I interact with. If I know generally, like, okay, this is, you're in this 4-5 space, then like, okay, like I understand you a little bit better, right? So I think kind of landing it here that the more that we understand ourselves and other people, the more that we can offer to other people. And we can give in a way that they feel love and they experience love. Any final thoughts from you, Lisa, as we conclude?
I agree with that. It enables us to bring what we have. And I think it enables us to, so that's giving, but I think it also makes us better receivers because we're valuing what others are bringing too. So there's just this cooperative kind of flourishing that happens when everyone is kind of showing up as they are, bringing their best and working to cultivate maybe what's missing. I think if everybody's doing that work, the world becomes a better place.
Ooh, I love that phrase, cooperative flourishing. That's like my new favorite phrase, I think. Lisa, is there one or two resources that you would recommend on the Enneagram? Because there's so many out there. Which ones do you like?
Yeah, there are so many out there. That this is part of the problem. And my recommendations, usually I try to make them specific to the person, because some people want a novel and some people don't. So I guess if we're just talking about maybe a place to begin, if you have a faith worldview and that's what you want, there's a book called Self to Lose, Self to Find by Marilyn Vansel. It's not overwhelming, and it's a great kind of summary from that faith-based perspective. If you're wanting to kind of separate that and just really understand the psychology, I tend to like the book by Russ Hudson and Don Riso that was written long time ago. We'll have to clarify this in the notes, but I think it's Understanding Your Personality Type. Okay. And it contains their test. And a word about testing, by the way, just everybody hold test results loosely. It is literally just a place to narrow down and start getting curious. It is not diagnostic. But the Riso-Hudson test, I like it partly because it doesn't just say you are this. It actually measures all nine, which I think gives us a good picture. Like we're more, like there's a lot going on. But that book in particular is just a good introduction.
And then the other thing, Lisa, that when I saw you, Ryan O'Neill did a whole, Sleeping at Last. He produces music under that name. And I would encourage people to listen to his set of songs, because he actually did a song based on each personality type. And they're really powerful.
I actually want to affirm that as maybe the best suggestion. And not just the songs. I actually go to Sleeping at Last podcasts and look for the Enneagram podcast, because he has a podcast that plays each song and then explains each song, why he chose the words, and he interviews an expert, and you learn more about the time. It's a great, great, great way to learn. If you over a period of time, listen to all nine, you're probably going to land and figure out yourself, and you're going to have a better understanding of everybody else. That might be a really good way.
Yeah. And any further thoughts from you?
Oh, I just love this. Thank you so much. You know me so well. I feel so known. But also I just appreciate, also, I mean, you didn't talk about this, but like when we go into health, like when we become healthier. So, and like where we go when we are in health and healthy, when I'm a healthy six. And so it gives me hope too, that I'm not stuck. That and it really helps me to evaluate and appreciate other types too, because I'm like, oh, when I'm a healthy six, I look more like a nine. So I'm like, I want to be more of like a peacemaker, empathetic, person.
So maybe the way to say that is, when I'm a healthy six, all six things that I'm doing is grounded in peace.
Yeah, and I can tell when I am healthy and then when I'm reacting. So when I'm reacting, I'm
The gift and curse of awareness.
Gift and curse. Right. So anyway, it's just such an amazing journey when you enter. And I would really encourage all of our listeners to listen to
Sleeping at Last.
Sleeping at Last. But also like maybe even find a coach or talk to a spiritual director or somebody who is a little bit farther along in their journey. It's a good one.
Yeah, I feel like it took you a while, Lisa, to kind of understand all this stuff. And so we are the recipients now of your wisdom and your expertise. So we're really grateful for that. Thanks for being on the podcast, Lisa. And thank you guys for listening to this episode of it. If you love it, give us 5-star rating and share it with your friends. And we'll see you guys next time.